Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we're talking about communication in the games industry, how it's changed in recent years, and whether those changes have been positive. I'm Matthew Sorey, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Now then.
Calvin Kemp.
Hey.
And Nick Hoff.
Hello.
Guys, so we're going to talk about communication within the video game industry. So I should preface this discussion by saying that the whole idea about talking about this subject, communication, has really been brought up by what's happened in the industry to do with Phil Fish and Marcus Beer's Twitter spat, should we call it, recently. So to give an overview of those events, Marcus Beer does some work for a website, GameTrailers.com. He's probably most famous for his work on Annoyed Gamer. He does like a weekly show where he talks about things in the industry, and he's a fairly annoyed chap. And he was on the Game Trailers podcast, Invisible Walls. He was talking about Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow and about how they refused to comment. I think it was to Game Informer when they were asked about something that was happening in the industry. And Marcus Beer took issue with this and basically called them out and said that he thinks that they should be willing to give comments to these games media sites, because these are the sites that publicise their work when they need it publicised, and get the information out there to the general public. And he said some nasty things about Phil Fish. Phil Fish subsequently said a lot of nasty things as well on Twitter and announced the cancellation of Fez 2. So really that's prompted this discussion. I want to get into how communication has changed in recent years, whether we think it's good or bad, but just focusing in on this specific event that happened, the spat between Marcus and Phil and the subsequent cancellation of Fez. What do we think about that? What do we think this says about the industry and the state of the industry? What do you think about it, Nick?
It's kind of difficult. I mean, the argument from a lot of people sticking up for Phil Fish is that you if you're on Twitter and you have a public face and you're a game designer, that mm-hmm. Eventually you get worn down by the constant slagging offs and criticism that you get.
And Phil Fish does get a lot of slagging
offs. Yeah, he does. I mean, whether occasionally you do feel that he brings some of that on himself, mm-hmm. but also with the access to developers and, you know, things like Twitter give people the opportunity to just get straight in people's faces and mm-hmm. Say ridiculous things sometimes, and sometimes valid criticism. But it's interesting. It's difficult. The thing is that Phil Fish quitting over something that a guy said who might not have expressed it particularly well, mm-hmm. but he did have at least a valid point that he was making. It wasn't just someone calling Phil Fish out for being a tool for no apparent reason. It was an inelegant argument, but I mean, he did have a reason for saying that. So Phil Fish is saying that this is a latest line in a long line of things that have been said to him and criticisms that he's got. And he says, he's basically saying that it's come to a head now where developers are just being forced out of the industry by the cynicism and the bitter comments that people are making. Mm. Whether that's true or whether this was an isolated incident of someone getting narked off at a comment, I don't know. But it's certainly, I think it is true that developers do have to face a lot more harsh criticism and abuse than they ever had before.
Mm-hmm. With social media, yeah. Things like this. Yeah, so there's a certain, I don't know, immediacy, isn't there, to social media and this new type of communication. It's only been around for a few years, but someone like Phil Fish, if he was making games in the past, before the advent of the internet and social media, he wouldn't have had this kind of thing. He wouldn't have had this kind of communication with his fans. But I think it's an interesting point you raised about he's a public personality. He's a celebrity, and we see this elsewhere. It's not just video game industry. Celebrities anywhere and everywhere get harassed, get followed by the paparazzi in the media, and lots of them react very badly to it. And I think Fish is someone that does seem to react quite badly to this kind of thing. And it just seems like these days we're getting lots of these events, lots of these fights in public on Twitter, in the video game industry that get blown out of all kind of like sensible proportions just because everyone gets involved. It's social media. It's done in the public. It's like airing your dirty laundry in public for everyone to see, everyone to have an opinion about, and everyone to get involved with. That's where having an opinion now, I could say. But I want to broaden it as well and not just talk about this event and not say, well, I think Marcus was right or Phil was right. I'm not interested in that. So what about you, Shane? What do you think about what's happening?
I don't know if it's new. I don't think like the attitude of people in general has changed. I just think that everyone's now got, the internet gives everyone an avenue to say something. And in the past, someone sat next to him would turn around and said, just shut up, you're talking rubbish. But now everyone's on an equal footing and no one can be told to shut up. Mm-hmm. And it just ends up with, like, for example, Twitter is now being used in a way that it was never intended to be used as. It was supposed to be for projects and sharing, you know, links out. That's why it's got a short character limit. Mm-hmm. But now it's just become this giant thing where if you can do tests where if you go to certain people and certain game designers or writers, and you see, you'll check out a tweet they've made and just scroll down and you can get pretty much abuse all the time. Mm-hmm. The things and people can just dish it out. And there's other people that have come out of the woodwork since said, you know, there's been times when Jim Sterling came out and said it. He's thought about the fact, what's the point? Mm. You know, when people are just giving you like really hateful commentary all the time. I mean, you imagine it's bad enough when you might write an article and you might get a comment or two, personal attacks just because you rated the game 1 out of 10 lower than they wanted you to. But if you imagine that on a daily basis all the time, mm-hmm. and it's probably going to make me unpopular to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. But I think this comes from where video games are born from socially. So mm-hmm. if we go back to the beginning of video games, it was born generally from men who were sat inside for long hours. It basically became this like elite circle of people that would just stay in all the time and build these games. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it'd be unfair to say that a lot of people obviously weren't, sort of people that didn't get picked first for football got into video game design as a way of making their own thing. And then so you have this kind of locked away thing. And then on top of that, generally people who have a cynical or sarcastic sense of humour are more of likely not to fit in at school. That's another thing that comes through. So then you've got these things like Annoyed Gamer and other things like this where there's this constant cynicism all the time, mm-hmm. or these kind of, they'll just say, oh, well, it's just a joke, it's just the thing I do. But if you're saying that's okay and you're getting paid to do that, then what kind of message is that giving into people writing blogs and people that comment on stuff? When the people who are having a voice at the top of the like pyramid of, you know, or games critique or journalists, whatever you want to call it, at the top, mm-hmm. do these sort of things. And you go on YouTube and you'll have all these channels with millions of votes where people just come out with passing off, you know, homophobic comments left, right, and center and people lapping it up. And so you add those two together and then, so you have this kind of weird elitism with this kind of cynicism, and then you put that in 140 characters on Twitter where you can say whatever you want and no one can do anything about it. And some people mm-hmm. might say, oh, you're a dick, I'm going to rape your mum. And then they'll just go to work and not even think about the fact they sent it. But somebody's going to pick up, you know, that tweet when they open up their phone, and they've probably got 50 more on top of that. And getting that on a daily basis, and you're just thinking, I'm making video games for you to enjoy. I mean, obviously you're paying for mine getting paid, but I'm doing something artistic that people can enjoy. And all people are doing is using any example to try and slag me off.
It's a weird one. I think what you're saying about Twitter is right. There's a lack of consequence for what you say. Anyone can have a voice, anyone can have an opinion, and it can be as nasty as they want to make it, and they can get away with it. They don't have any consequence for that. There's no consequence for their actions there. But I think it's an interesting point that it seems more exaggerated or more prominent in the video games industry than in other industries. I mean, I don't see these stories coming out about the film industry, about the music industry, anywhere near as much as we do about the video game industry. Do you think that's just because I focus in on the video game industry more? Or
you wouldn't hear like Ryan Gosling quits films because he gets abuse on Twitter about Only God Forgives being too slow.
Well, yeah. You heard about that,
which was my opinion, by the way.
You heard about that girl from Weeds, what's her name? Something Parker. She quit the film industry because she got too much abuse. I mean, it's on
really?
Both sides.
Okay. Yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah, so maybe it's just a case that I'm that my
Do you reckon that's probably the same people?
No, I felt bad because I'm always I'm always on the verge of like just trashing TV series because Weeds ended horribly. I'm like, oh no, I'm putting into this abuse, you know.
Mm. I think it's a strange thing. Like, we are people who write video game reviews. We write critiques. We put our opinions out there online. And I'm sure we've all written bad reviews before, of games that people have created. I mean, does it ever make you feel bad? What do you think about that kind of thing?
No.
Do you ever think about
it? I write it for consumer. No? I'm not writing for the developer, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to give him a pat on the back or whatever.
Mm. I think you can, well, generally I could tell when I'm going over the top about something and when something is crossing that line. Which I think that's the thing about the annoyed gamer thing is that he had a valid point, but the way he came across when he said it, like Shane was saying, that thing of having that persona of that sort of cynical, angry, bitter persona, and you just...
Well, it's interesting at what the conversation is, right? Like, one guy's the annoyed gamer, then the other guy's an Andy Kaufman avatar, and he's leaving Twitter. I mean, what do we really expect out of this conversation?
You know? Yeah.
But if I go back to your point, Nick, then, you said, I'm not sure whether I agree that it was a right point under the argument, because I don't think people in the industry should be expected to answer everything all the time to get coverage back.
No, I agree that the point that maybe they should be open, maybe they should answer if the press asks them about these issues. I don't think you should be forced to say... To speak to the press, which is kind of what he was saying.
Well, yeah,
but,
I mean, it was also Jonathan Blow in the discussion, right? And he's with Sony now, so what do they really expect him to say about Microsoft's plan? Should he really be, like, obligated to comment if he's with Sony?
Well, the thing is, if he's asking those two, he obviously wants a bad reaction out of them, doesn't he? So then he can say, well, these two guys are slagging off Xbox again, because they're not going to turn around. Both of them said they don't want to work with Microsoft again.
Right.
So asking them, what do you think about the indie policy, is just a way to try and bait them to explode
on
Twitter.
You think it was loaded?
Yeah.
Mm. I don't think anyone should be expected to do anything like that. Any developer should be expected to do that to get something from the game's media. That's not how that relationship should work, really. It shouldn't be. I don't know. It seems kind of strange that it should be like that, and it definitely shouldn't. But I think there's an interesting point to be made in the fact that I've gone completely blank.
Just cut this part out after you.
No, we'll keep this in.
We cut.
I had a great point, best point ever.
Let it run. We'll just put you on the spot. I'm not editing this out, by the way. We're keeping this in.
Oh, God, it'll come back to me later on. But I don't think that relationship should work like that. I mean, the relationship between games media and the actual developers, the development industry. Do you guys think it should be that kind of, like, enforced relationship where if you want something from games media... then you have to give us something.
No, Patrick Klepek on the Giant Bomb had a really good article on it. He was saying that symbiotic relationship Beer was describing, that's outdated thinking. That's not how it works anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think it should ever have worked like that. Anyway, my point was, just remembered it, it's not that great, it's just that I think... Marcus Beer, yeah, he may have had a point, but I think it's the way in which you say things. I mean, he put it across in quite a nasty way. He called him lots of nasty words, all that jazz. Now, I'm not saying I want to live in a world of candy floss and unicorns, but I think there's a way you can go about getting your points across maturely. But, I mean, there's no need. You're only going
to
propagate that kind of immaturity in the industry.
Exactly. It comes back to that thing I said before about this, that the pyramid hierarchy. And if you're at the top, and you're setting an example. Can you imagine like a political discussion or a discussion on art or film and somebody just comes on the show and just basically says, oh, Steven Spielberg, he's a fucking dickhead, that guy, I hate him. you're not going to get that, are you? They're just like, well, you're sacked. Get out.
Yeah.
But then we just seem to say, oh, yeah, okay, this guy's great, more hits.
And that's the thing, like, this is Marcus Beer's job, his profession. And if you want to be a professional in any kind of industry, be a professional, don't be a child.
I think it's that thing of, there's a certain, emphasis on ranting, on being an angry, on having anger as part of your personality. And Jim Sterling was talking about that and saying that when he was starting out, he went way too far with that. And he thought that, you know, that was a get out clause that you could, that by almost creating this character of being furious and bitter and angry about everything.
He's gotten much more. He's gotten much smarter about that, hasn't he? He directs it in the right way.
Yeah, he's talked about how he looks back on his early stuff now and he thinks, you know, he's glad that he's changed into this sort of more mellow and thoughtful person. But I think, you know, when you're trying to make your name, it's very easy to fall into that trap, isn't it?
In video games, trying to be the Charlie Brooker sort of
without understanding the subtleties of it or the kind of, yeah.
But it comes back to being more pervasive always in video games more than anything else on this position. Because if you look at like film, if you're a high critic, you know, your opinions, even if people, it's like, well, I'm going to go on a bit of a sidestep here, but I'm going to talk about kind of respectful disagreement if something completely lacking in any conversation about video games. So in film, somebody can write a review or on a podcast talk about it and I can just think, I don't agree at all. However, I respect your opinion and you're giving your points. Okay, we don't agree on this. Let's move on to the next one. And, you know, I have my opinion, but in this, it's just like, right, I'm going to bash out a quick 2-sentence abuse, move on to the next one.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting that it seems focused in video games, very, very focused. It seems like there's a group of people who literally get enjoyment out of being these kind of trolls that write these horrible things, horrible replies that have absolutely no consequence, and that's probably why they do it.
But
there's definitely like a professional and amicable, a mature way of going about having your opinion and disagreeing with someone. We all have opinions. That's why we do what we do on the site. But you can have discussions about those opinions and people that disagree with your opinions without descending into, I don't know, fights and childish behavior.
I think it's that this sort of forum mentality that a lot of video game websites and brings out in people, where it's almost unregulated and people can sort of say what they want and it gets vitriolic and nasty almost as soon as you start, as soon as the forum starts. Which, I mean, I think video games, like Shane was saying, they've got that history where, because they're a fairly new phenomenon, relatively speaking, I think analysis and stuff and it hasn't really got to that point where people can have sort of, those sort of more intellectual discussions about things.
I don't know. I don't like the whole idea of being locked into that label of the old way we looked at it. I think the audience is much different now. The people who are yelling about Call of Duty on the internet, they weren't around then.
It's interesting about that Call of Duty thing, because I was just thinking then back to when the original beta came out for Call of Duty 4 on the Xbox, and we were playing it, and everyone was chatting normally from different nations, and then by a year of that game being out, it was just like, I'm gonna have to go into party chat even if I'm on my own, because I can't spend an hour of my time just muting everyone else other than the one person I want to talk to on this team. And
it's so weird how different games bring out that aggression, isn't it? Like back then, I'd like go to Lost Planet and there'd be a bunch of polite Japanese guys on there, then Call of Duty, just a bunch of Americans screaming.
It's absolute carnage. It's bad enough in this country for that game, but I think that it's interesting. And it'd be good we don't get the sort of analysis, like kind of Nick was saying, that we should do sometimes because we're so new, and I guess there's no money for people to get paid to do it. But if somebody like we looked into the psychology of why certain games, and like a real intelligent look into why those certain games just bring out that sort of attitude, which I guess brings us on to the other part that's happened recently, where the Call of Duty developer opened up the blog, where every time he gets a hateful tweet, he's been posting it on this blog.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen it, it's disgusting, the amount of stuff he gets, because he basically released a patch which slightly refined a weapon, and that was it.
Oh yes, I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's some of the things that people, like, some of those tweets are absolutely vile, things that you wouldn't say, definitely wouldn't say to people's faces in real life. I don't imagine these people that are tweeting them would be.
Threatening to
peel
his
wife. There's actually a website, I'm pretty sure it's called Fat, Ugly and Slutty or something like that, that is a collection of things that people have been sent over Xbox Live that were either said to people or messages they got, basically calling them fat, ugly or slutty in different
ways. I'm always getting those slutty messages.
Mainly directed at women. Yeah, you're getting slow.
Yeah, every day I can't even get on Xbox Live anymore. I can't deal with the pressure.
Yeah, that's me sending them. Sorry.
Well, if it's from you, that's
no. So let's focus a little bit more on the direction of horrible messages and pretty horrible words towards women. So if you look at someone like Anita Sarkeesian, who's doing a series on women in video games at the moment, looking at how women are portrayed in video games, she gets some particularly vitriolic, hateful messages sent to her over Twitter and underneath her videos. And it's not just her, it's generally women throughout the industry, I would say, are more abused than men are. And do you think that's predominantly because the audience for video games is male?
So,
yeah. And young?
Sarkeesian's interesting because she got a whole thing funded based on the hate she got on the internet. Like, she wouldn't be out there if it weren't for those people. So they kind of promote her in a way. They're the ones that got her crowdfunding done for her. So she should be thankful for them.
I don't think she is.
I don't know if she should be thankful for all the hate, but yeah, it's kind of a very strange situation and circumstances.
I do know what you mean, though. They obviously, they're the ones that advertised it, and there'd be screenwriting forums, and there'd be one or two people that probably go, wait a minute, maybe she's got a point, I might throw a couple of dollars at that.
Right.
Well, there's a horrible kind of irony there about people, like, she's announced, yeah, I want to do a series on women in video games about how men portray women poorly in video games. And then all these guys come out and say, fuck you, bitch, I'm going to kill you because you're a woman. It's like, there's a strange irony there that I just can't understand people not getting when they write those messages.
Just proving the point.
Yeah, proving their own point, proving her point.
I don't want to say all her funding is empathy money, but I think a lot of it is. I think people feel bad and they want to prove that that's not everyone. You know, like, even I feel bad, like, I don't want it to not be a project. I think there's a discussion to have and this stuff gets in the way of it.
Definitely. So yeah, that's a good point. It's not everyone, because it's definitely not everyone. do you think it's very much a very small focus group of individuals, or do you think it's
I thought that for a while.
Much more widespread.
When I sit and think about it, I think, but the industry as a whole, when people write stuff, they'll play it down and say a small corner niche group. But for this level and the consistency, I can't imagine it is. But then if you put it into scope, if you've got what, 140 million PS3s and Xbox 360s knocking about, not including people that play on PC. And then if you put that all together, that's, and you only need like 1% of that. You've got 1.4 million people every day sending hateful messages. That's quite a lot.
Yeah.
So it is probably overall statistically a small number, but it, because of the kind of user base is constantly growing in these things, and there's this weird kind of, it's almost like old football. Where, obviously in old football back in England, you'd have the groups that go down and afterwards just have a fight. And that doesn't happen as much as it used to. But it's almost like that, but the internet version, where it's, I like this video game. If you don't like it, I'm going to give you a year's abuse every day. And it's also the same mentality. It's weird.
I think the analogy there with football is quite an interesting one, because if you think about the comparisons, video games, you essentially have teams, don't you?
Yeah.
You have Microsoft, you have Sony, and you see a lot of fights coming out of that. So you have this weird kind of culture built up around supporting a certain side that you don't have in other industries. Movies, you don't have people supporting Sony Pictures and then some other people elsewhere supporting another film house. So do you think it's born quite a lot from the fact of how the video game industry is set up, that we have these kind of sides and that we get supporters?
Because at the moment, with these new console launches, it's almost like a transfer window. In sports, when the opposing fans of the opposing teams are just slagging each other off, saying, "Yeah, your shit player's going to get sold this way. He's rubbish, or you've just bought, you spent too much on this player, or you spent too much on this RAM, or it costs too much, or you've got a rubbish goalkeeper, or you've got Kinect."
Yeah, and it's, I suppose it's also the competitiveness of games. I mean, most games interactive, the challenge is they are competitive. Not every game, but lots of games. Like, and we talk about Call of Duty in particular having quite a bad community when it comes to aggressiveness, aggression and like nasty things.
I think it's like an anti-community.
Well, Call of Duty
has such a massive audience compared to anything else as well. I mean,
so do you think it's the competitiveness that brings out that spirit?
Well, that's possibly everyone. It's not representative of any group. It's everyone who play games has played a Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So it's easy to find communities of anything in there.
Yeah.
So how would you, if you were a games company, say, for example, you're making the new Call of Duty, mm-hmm. and someone said to you, okay, your role is to try and split these groups of people when this game comes out, because we want new game, because this is another thing. What people don't realize is this stops people getting into games. Like, because for example, the stats saying that 50% of gamers are women or female. Now, when was the last time you played a game online and heard a female speak? It's always males. So I'm presuming that they're all sat there mic'd, because as soon as they say anything in a female voice, it's just going to be bombardment.
I've experienced that personally. I'm sure I was playing Halo online once and I heard a woman speak. And everyone just descended on her and ripped her for being a woman and came up with some absolutely disgusting stuff. And it's just shocking, really, that kind of, like, there's this elitist club of men who think that women shouldn't be playing games. I mean, how backward is that?
I think women need to be behind the games before we'll see any kind of change. They have to be the ones making it, and they have to appeal to those groups. And I think that's great when they do.
But that shouldn't even be the situation in the first place.
What, that they're making games?
It shouldn't matter who makes the games.
I think it
game.
Does. Like,
I mean, women should get abused for playing games just because...
So as a guy, I can't write female characters, you know? I think it's impossible for me. I feel like a woman has to write a female for it to be true.
Okay, you don't feel that you could empathize with the other sex?
I don't feel like I completely understand it and know where they're coming from all the time.
I suppose if you look at film though, they'd have male directors and stuff, but it's not people going to a film and boo when the woman comes on.
Yeah, but that's a woman putting in her character. She can understand.
Well, I don't necessarily agree that men can't write female characters. You look at many other industries, you can see plenty of examples.
I'm not speaking for everyone, but I can't write females.
Yeah.
Like in my short fiction, I can only write men.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do you think about let's talk about different types of communication in the industry. We talked about communication from the general public going back upwards to the industry. But what do you think about the relationship between developers and the media? Let's look at something like Jeff Keighley's Doritogate scandal. Was that last year?
It was, yeah.
I can't remember when it was. Last
terrifying,
year.
Terrifying, isn't it? That whole year
and
ago.
What that says about the industry, the kind of relationship between the video game industry and the top media sites out there.
I think it's better now than it ever was because it's more visible.
It's becoming more open.
Yes, I think people are, because of the internet and things like Twitter and Facebook, people can see these photos, see these things happening, and then launch on them in real time almost. Whereas in the past, if you're just doing printed only magazines, it could happen all the time and you wouldn't have a clue. I mean, printed magazines, if you go to these conventions, like if you've been to E3 or you go to Eurogamer, if you're around certain people at the right time, you'll hear all these conversations going on about the real stuff that happens. But I think it's a lot less than it used to be just because there's more risk in doing it. And like, for example, 2 years ago, I went to Eurogamer. Activision were doing a VIP event 2 days before the release date of the new Call of Duty, where basically all the people that were reviewing the game were being sent to this really expensive place in London and, you know, being bought drinks and stuff. So they kind of do these parties, like press parties, rather than...
Didn't we go to that one?
Anything else.
No. You give it a 10 out of 10? Yeah.
Yeah.
You monsters.
You probably should have done. So those things still exist. But unfortunately, there's this level that there seems to be half a belief that if you get paid, well, not even if you get paid, because game journalism isn't, there's very few people that get paid enough to live on it. But if you get paid in any sort of way, then your opinion isn't valid because you're getting paid by the industry, which is a really weird, again, cynical kind of thing to have, where it's like, you wouldn't say it in another thing. He's paid to be an art critic. Well, he knows nothing about art. I'm not listening to him. I'm just going to ask my best mate, George, what he thinks about this painting. And it doesn't make any sense, but we have it here where if you write for something that's like, say for example, above a blog where it's official, it's a team, has some sort of structure to it, it's instantly like, oh well, you know, you're just paid off by Microsoft. And it's like us, we've had the past claims to Thunderbolt of, oh, you're just doing it to get clicks. We don't have any advertisement.
And we don't
have
get
a million clicks.
So...
We do it for the love, man.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. If I got offered like lots of free stuff from the press, I'd accept it in an instant. Because, you know, but it doesn't happen. That's the real
hoodies.
No comment.
So if there's anyone out there that wants to nick some money,
I'll take
10 out of 10.
No, we have had things in the past, but we're always very clear about being as ethical as possible and stating when we've had stuff.
It's an interesting thing, like you say about that video games journalists generally aren't paid very much, and there's very few people who can make a living out of this. Which is a really good point, because people get all irate about advertisement being brought into games journalism, game industry, but game sites need that kind of stuff to be able to support themselves. Well, I mean, it doesn't work otherwise. You can't have people who have this as their full-time profession where they invest themselves entirely in video games unless they have some kind of financial support system. And advertising is what we have at the moment. It's the only way, because I don't pay to go to IGN, to Polygon, to any of these sites anymore. I get it for free. So I accept a certain level of advertising.
So games journalism's odd. It's really the only journalism where there's no schooling needed. There's no scholarly profession about video games. I mean, it's opening up now. There's some classes but that's why I think people are doubtful, because there's no required knowledge to get in, you know.
I think a lot of the time as well, video games journalists come into the industry through their being fans of games and franchises and things.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to hook them in or you know, they maybe don't even see it as a problem when they're accepting.
The high scores, because everyone starts off as a fan and they just want to talk about the games they love.
Yeah, because like Calvin said, we don't have that sort of, you know, you don't get qualifications to go into games journalism.
I think people will be taken much more seriously. Like, stuff starting around here, like Seattle's a great city for video games, but I mean, we're very progressive about that kind of thing, and we're starting to get classes. Like, people could study Portal or something. I don't know what they'd study.
Yeah. But Halo 4.
Yeah.
Don't you have quite good tax breaks over there? Yeah. I'm sure in Canada you have good tax breaks. Over here we don't, which is why, it keeps varying, so.
Yeah, they brought it in. Yeah. Take it out again.
You're too stuck up over here for that sort of thing.
It's austerity, isn't it?
Yeah. None of that technology, political. Please. Yep. We invented the internet, but now the rest of the world can have it. We're done.
Yeah, so that's a good point, that there's a certain lack of, I don't know, academia built up around video games journalism. You do see lots of people who become games journalists out of the love, but they also gone down an academic route where they've done, I don't know, journalism or English literature as a major or something like that, and they do have some kind of training that helps them out. And they're very professional. Yeah. But yeah, I've noticed, seen some adverts on like Edge magazine and whatever for video games journalism courses and journalism courses popping up. It seems to be something that's coming in more and more these days. So I definitely think that should help. Yeah. I don't know, the credibility of the video games journalism sector.
You need things that already exist to pay people to do it. So, for example, say you have like The Guardian, The Times and stuff. In fact, they do have some writers.
Got some great writers.
Yeah, so they're the sort of ones that do get paid enough, do kind of survive, but that's built upon kind of a magazine or a newspaper that exists for other reasons, but has branched out into having its own. I think they put it into tech rather than culture for some reason.
They do, yeah, which that's something I always pick up on. I'd rather it be in culture, but
yeah.
Different discussion.
Yeah, I guess obsession with numbers happens a lot.
Yeah, so obviously we're a fan site. Well, we're not a fan site, but we're a site run by enthusiasts.
Enthusiast press. I think it's the best way to
describe
it.
Exactly. Like we all do what we do because we love video games. So how do you guys go about, say you're reviewing a game, it's a franchise you really like, how do you go about being objective about it?
I don't review the franchises I like, mostly.
Okay. It's quite an interesting
keep your scores low.
Role.
Yeah, I do like to keep a good balance, but.
Yeah. There's a thing, I can't remember who said it, but it wasn't in video games, but it was somewhere else. He said you need to basically experience the worst to appreciate the best.
Exactly.
So it's something I always take on, where I will play some iOS games that look a bit crap.
Well.
As well as ones that look good, because I need to understand what the real balance is. Because when people say, oh, I played this game and it's rubbish, I'm thinking, well, you know, no, I've played a lot of rubbish games in my 25 years of playing games. Some stuff that doesn't even boot right, stuff that'll crash every level, stuff that controls are awful. And it's like, no, there is a lot of crap out there.
Well, there's nothing better for me than finding a great idea in a below average game, you know?
Yes.
I like giving everything a chance, because sometimes there's that one good idea, it just, It wasn't executed, but you still want to see it.
Exactly. And if everyone just goes out and buys games that just get 10 out of 10 and 9s, that's why it homogenizes, because then everyone else copies that. Whereas if you, like you said, if you get a game that might be, you know, just perfectly average, but there might be something really quite unique in there, especially with indie games, where there might be this idea of, oh, this is a bit different, or or it could just be the soundtrack's great.
Yeah. I guess it's like, well, you get film reviewers and journalists who review genre films, you know. They heavily focus on particular genres, like horror genres and stuff, and they find interesting things and ideas and things that pop up in those that wouldn't in other titles as well. So I guess, you know, like you say, just try and broaden your scope and look at everything.
Always got to be objective. That's the whole point of you doing it. You've got to provide a critique and not just gush about something. And I mean, even if you enjoy something a lot, well, okay, that's fine, but what does it really mean? Is this game actually doing anything, or does it just function? You know, if you pick up the pad, play it, and you go, oh yeah, that was alright. You know, was that anything more? Did it have a reason to exist? Was it any better than the last platformer game you played? You know, if this game never came out, would you have even been ever bothered if you'd never played it, sort of thing? You need to put that into perspective.
I think we talked about this on the previous podcast, and I always come back to the point of games journalism. You need to try and, if you're going to write a critique of a video game, you need to try and assess what its aim was, what it set out to do, what it was trying to do, and how effectively it did that, whether it was any good at doing that.
Definitely. But I think going back to the communication thing is, there needs to be some sort of more trust between the reader and, people just need to be a bit more positive. And I don't mean people, there's going to be people that slag everyone off and everything off and just constantly do that throughout life. But
human nature.
When people read a review and go, oh, that's pretty good, maybe people should just say, that was a pretty good review, and actually post it rather than only getting up to the point where people that really disagree with something post. Because there must be people that read stuff all the time and go, I'll read a review and go, oh, that's a really good review, that, you know.
Almost I don't completely agree. The best response you get is nothing, you know. If everything that's said is left on the page and nobody else has anything to add, that's almost my ideal for writing. I want no feedback, and then I know I've done okay.
Even if people disagreed, it was respectfully and they walked away.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just talk about different types of communication. So something that's cropped up quite recently with the internet, I would say, is almost direct communication from the industry, from the video game developers, directly to the public, not using journalism sites, not using magazines. Something like developers' blogs. I mean, do you think they're a positive thing, bypassing the whole journalism sector?
It's good PR, isn't it?
I mean, it's very easy. I think where in the past, again, say when we didn't have the internet, we just had magazines, a game needed that magazine, that journalism to get the word out.
Yeah.
Now, every developer has their own, like, social community managers. They can get the word out themselves and they can manage that themselves.
I don't think it's a good thing, but I understand why it's there from their point of view, which is just to get more control on information. And because stuff leaks and gets out so quick, I guess it's a rare way of doing it. I don't think it's particularly healthy, because it breeds this kind of distrust across everyone that's writing something then. So if you've got a developer blog and then you've got somebody who is like an enthusiast press, people get treated the same as if they're saying about the same thing, when there's a difference between PR. And it blurs those lines, and that's why you get kind of hyperbolic writing. Like before, what Nick said before, when you know that it's just over the top praise, but it's because people are used to seeing that from reading other things that have that sort of language in it all the time.
Yeah.
Especially with copy and pasted press releases and stuff, because a lot of websites do that. And if you just take that word, again, everything's the greatest thing ever.
I mean, I've always thought the purpose of a site like Thunderball or any journalism site, video games journalism site, is to look at what's happening in the industry and be objective about that. Try and pull out what's positive, try and pull out what's negative, and highlight those things to the wider audience to specialise in that industry. I mean, I suppose that's the point. But if you're getting this direct communication between developer and the public, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but you are kind of cutting that second step out of the loop in a way.
I mean, I understand. I mean, I guess you can have developer blogs, which are great, but they are PR controlled. But then I guess I can't think of an example right now of where it is way more direct. But I suppose this does lead back into what we're talking about back at the beginning, where it's where developers having their own personal accounts on things like Twitter. Yeah. And it's interesting that I don't want to use the word interesting, but that we crave people to have a voice, to developers to actually say something and exist. It's like when you play a game such as, I'm trying to think of a big game example recently. I suppose Tomb Raider is one of the bigger ones this year. Metro, you know, who were the lead designers? Who were the people in the office walking around saying, this is how this is going to be. This is how that's going to work. This is what I want. We never hear about these people. They're just kept behind doors and then occasionally leave, move to another project. And when the sequel comes out, you think, why is this different? It's because the key people you never knew were there have now moved.
Yeah.
But you didn't know they moved because you didn't know who they were in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think the idea of the video game celebrity is an interesting one and one that's quite new. I mean, there's always been the really big guys that you knew about, Peter Molyneux and the Shigeru Miyamoto's, but it's much easier these days to get an idea of who a developer is, maybe a more niche developer, because you can find their personalities online and you can have that direct line of communication. And that's always, I think that's a great thing that we have that these days.
You talk about the developer blogs as well, and things like, Project Obsidian doing their Project Eternity thing. I think that's a good way of the fans. I guess in the sense they kind of have to do that because people have actually paid their money to make the game already. But it's nice to see you get people like Chris Avellone talking about game making these worlds and things like that. And you get a much more in-depth view than you would get in in most sort of interviews with press and magazines and websites like that. So I think that is good.
Kickstarter is a positive way of using this. It's brought us closer to the development. People are seeing how the games are made. It's been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like a behind the scenes, isn't it? In a way.
Well, you get the initial pitch, and that's so cool to see a game before it ever goes through any kind of dumbing down or people saying no from publishers, you know?
Yeah.
Usually I just expect everything that exists in retail has been gone through so much that it's not even the product they envision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate the developer blocks on the Project Eternity thing and Project Eternity website where they're talking about the mechanics of the game and the way they're building these classes and the way they're taking ideas that they've used before and they're trying out new mechanics and new ideas, which is really interesting if you're a gamer and you're a fan of those old school RPGs to see how they're taking on new ideas or changing them. That's really interesting. So I think that is a real positive of the kind of the connection between the developers and the fans.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I suppose what would help a communication side would, I don't know how much this happens, but I'm just thinking then, how often do we get good interviews between the press and, say, someone like that who's building the game, where they just sit down and have an honest conversation?
But I think with the non-disclosure things and, games, the big budget, the big budget side of things, they're so secretive about everything, and you really don't get to see anything behind the scenes.
That's what's been,
until the trailers.
That's another thing about Kickstarter, is they can't really afford to be secretive or their game doesn't get made. So I love that about it.
Well, I think that's independent games in general, isn't it?
Yes.
Small-scale games in general. Mm. That communication, they can have that now because they have the ability to have a blog, to have a social persona, and to get the word out there.
So going back to the personality things of like the celebrity, where there doesn't seem to be... We're never going to get a good balance because the internet does not allow for balance. So if you want people to be outspoken and you want people with better character and people that believe and care about things, then you are going to have to at times just say, I disagree, but I'm not going to attack you with personal hatred on this point. Otherwise, it's just going to... these people are just going to funnel out and we'll end up with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just like, well, I'm not going to say anything. What's the point? If I'm just going to get hassled constantly.
Mm-hmm. So the mature discussion, how do you think we can move more towards that kind of mature discussion?
I think it kind of goes back to what I said before about people being more positive.
Mm-hmm.
So when they read something that's good, then they actually say, oh, wait, I mean, that is actually a good thing, rather than just reading and going, all right, yeah, and then walking away and leaving it. Because what happens is people will read something, they'll think about it intelligently, they'll digest it and walk away. But the people that made that will never know that happened. And all they'll get is people going and go, no! Start smashing their hands on the keyboard in the comment section. And then they're just thinking, oh, bloody hell, everyone's just absolutely hated what I just spent 3 days thinking about and writing and trying to make a fair point. And it's just disheartening. It's like an endless uphill battle.
It's a weird thing. I think we seem to be more expressive when negative about things. When we see something bad, I think we find it easier to shout about the bad things than we do the good things. And you are right. I really think that we should, I don't know, make more of an effort to try and be positive about the things that we do enjoy and that we think are good.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because, for instance, when you're writing a review, often writing a positive review is a lot harder and less enjoyable than writing a negative review.
Yeah, the negative reviews just flow right out. Yeah. They're the easiest. Yeah, exactly. Right?
So why do you think that is then? Do you not think
I think that's just human nature.
Human nature. I think like, why is general media so negative? You turn the news on, it's dum-dum, someone's died, oh, there's been a plane crash. Whoa. It's mostly negative.
Well, it's that thing about negative news is always going to sell more than positive news.
Because it always seems to pike our interest. Well, do you not think? Maybe it's the survivalist instinct. We always look out for what could possibly happen, what bad things could possibly
more
happen.
Interesting to do you think that more interesting to write?
Do you think that explains why these communication explosions have happened? Because in video games, people are more connected to internet. They're usually more savvy about these things.
There's just such
they live in this culture, and then it bubbles up, and there's so much negativity, but it's quicker for people to jump on things.
Yeah,
I think it's probably a combination of lots of things we talked about. It's a combination of probably that human nature thing where we are more expressive when we're negative about something.
Well, anonymity and
together with the immaturity of the industry to some extent.
If you look at anonymity and then you lower the wall to anyone can do it, then it could just be one guy on like 5 accounts and death threats, you know. It's pretty
easy. Is it you, Calvin?
No.
You've been sending me all those nasty tweets, Calvin.
I've got 20 Twitter tabs open and one browser.
Coming up with the most creative insults you possibly can.
I don't know, there aren't any easy answers, really, because you can't just change what people are like in like a few years. Hopefully.
Can Nick? You need to come up with a solution right now.
I'm not Batman. If I was Batman, I'd sort it out. No problem.
Well, Call of Duty's went to shit in less than a few years, so, well, actually, things break quicker than you can fix them.
Man, it just made me think, well, this is why Call of Duty can't change. Look at what their audience does. They change, like, 4 stats on one gun, and they get death threats. How do they change that fucking game?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's a strange, like, I suppose we should talk about the relationship going upwards from the public to developers. So we see things like that where the public or this small group of enthusiasts and Call of Duty fans influences the way that this game is developed. We saw this with Mass Effect as well last year, where that huge petition that was started because people didn't like the ending of Mass Effect 3, and they actually got the ending changed. The developers changed it. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a relationship is that in any kind of artistic medium, where it's supposed to be some kind of expressive medium, where someone has an idea, they get that out, and it's a piece of art.
Well, there was no merit. The public can have an input. It wasn't art.
But that was the ending that they decided to do.
It was a crap ending, but to change it is just to completely invalidate the past 3 games.
Well,
I think it sets a strange precedent. Do you think it's positive?
3 with the ending they chose. It was a terrible
ending. Yeah, but at least that's to let them do, but I think it's a bad precedent to set
but
to say.
Say then, Calvin, do you think that it was right that they changed
it? Yeah, I think EA should listen to consumers. I think they're better off when they did.
But then don't you think we get into the situation where we have, like, everyone complaining about Call of Duty, where we just have literally no innovation in the industry because the most vocal people are the most negative people that are most likely to, as soon as they see something new, say that's
crap. I didn't think Choose Your Color was innovative either.
Which I suppose is fair enough. But
no, I think it was a crap ending, but I'd rather have a bad ending than the idea that people screaming on forums can dictate what everyone else then gets, because it might seem like, oh, this was a better ending, or better a bad ending.
I don't know.
But
I feel like
it's what it means overall.
I feel like I got better content because of them. I'm happier with Mass Effect now than I was before people were angry about it, so.
Yeah, in that one case, definitely. I just think for those people that worked on that, the internal kind of change that has had on how they will now do anything, whether it be a case where someone's had a great idea and they've gone, no, people might complain about that, scrap it.
Yeah,
and we're going to end up with the same with that thing.
Well, exactly, yeah, it's going to change so much about development.
They can't do anything ballsy now, yeah.
I was just going to say, if that story had had, if it was one narrative, you know, you have one arc through it, like Last of Us and something, and people didn't like the ending and they changed it. I think that you could take issue with, but I think the difference with Mass Effect is that it wasn't, you know, there's so many variations to what players' decisions and stuff would have happened in the end that people felt they had sort of ownership over the ending.
And
more than they would
in
that's
a weird point to bring up because, we have this sense of investment in video games as well because they're interactive, because you're building a character.
But that was,
and people feel entitled because of that.
But specifically in Mass Effect as well, because the idea of the whole franchise was that you got to do what you
want.
Yeah,
I think.
And at the end,
the problem
they took
with
that
is giving people any control at all. If you want to tell a story, you just have to tell a story. If you give people control of the story, then they have ownership of the story. And you have to listen to what they say.
Say this exact same thing happened for the ending of The Last of Us, and we won't talk about what it is, spoilers, in case anyone's listening.
I've not played it yet.
Played
it.
I've not either.
And for Shane. And so say this happened... Oh, we probably ruins it because you haven't played it. But say it happened for, I don't know, a linear story-based game's ending, Bioshock Infinite's ending. People complained and said, we don't like this, we want it changed. Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, The Last of Us had a good ending. I mean, everyone loved it, yeah.
But say everyone just didn't like The Last of Us ending. You might have liked it, but say the general public didn't like it, and the outcry from people interested in video games was negative, and the developer listened to that and subsequently changed it. Do you think that's how the industry should work?
Well, I think it was the difference is in one of those stories, you're playing through the developer's vision, whereas in Mass Effect, to a certain extent, people wanted to have the options that their character would make.
Yeah.
That was so different. They felt
there's never going to be a good ending if you give people control along the way. There's no way to make a good ending out of that. You have to have a set ending that ends hard, and you can't let them say what it is. Otherwise, they'll be disappointed when it's not exactly what they expect.
Maybe that's what they thought for the ending then. But then obviously it backfired at that point because it's too late.
I think what I did is wanted to get a game out at a certain time. And then they couldn't be bothered to finish it because it was going to take too long.
Mm.
Like the sort of Dragon Age 2. Well,
it was amazing how positive the press were. Of it, like initially, nobody even complained. That first week of press, everyone was so positive on the ending.
I think it's three quarters
of a really great game.
Yeah.
And then it falls a bit apart.
Well, I felt it would happen for the first two games. I barely even wanted to finish it. I just knew if they give me choice, it's never going to turn out how I want. Mm. I need like a Red Dead ending where it does its thing and it has something to say.
Yeah.
There's finality to it.
Definitely.
Okay. That's interesting. We've had some interesting discussions there about communication. Anyone got anything else about communication within the industry that they would like to discuss?
What I've said before, next time you read something and you enjoy it, say so.
Be positive.
Yeah, it might take a few years, but being passive is accepting something. So if somebody's being an arse and you just let it happen, then that's a form of acceptance.
What do we think about Phil Fish's response then, quitting? Do you think that was justified or... It sort of feels like
it's a
prima donna sort of thing to do.
It's a very personal thing, isn't it? He clearly had some personal issues with what was going on, not just in this incident. Like he said, it was a prolonged thing. All of the rubbish he'd been getting, all the crap he'd been getting, and I'm not saying that he didn't invoke some of that crap in the first place. But he's reacted to it very badly.
But
I don't know. I could say that I wouldn't react to it as badly as he did, but I don't know. I'm not in that situation.
Well, he's behind a Andy Kaufman avatar, so in 4 months he'll be back wrestling women, and then everything will be good again.
He's clearly a very emotional guy. So what did you think, Nick?
I think it depends what happens now. I mean, like Calvin said, I imagine that in a few months' time, Fez 2 will be back on, and things will... But it's like he was deciding that you can't make games without having the public, you know, without being out in the public. Because a more sort of rational person might say, well, stop being on Twitter then?
Or yeah.
Just quit, I mean, Twitter. I do... If Twitter's the problem, does that mean you have to stop making games altogether?
Quitter.
Or...
Yeah, I do find it kind of strange he cancelled the game because of this. Yeah. I mean, I suppose he said he takes issue with the entire games industry because of this. And
it was,
I mean,
just
Fez
one
was
little fella.
Highly praised. Yeah, Fez was a very well-loved game, highly
and
praised.
And also, it wasn't a perfect
feedback.
Game because there were a lot of problems with Fez that, you know, in terms of the patches not being available and
so
things like that.
So here's the thing, he could
start a petition on it to get it changed.
So with the internet, that's the whole reason it was successful, right? Was everyone talking about their experience and figuring out all the cryptic shit. Like, talk to their friends with, oh, what does this mean? But it's so easy to overlook that for the negative of when you're not making something what people say and not talking to the media. I mean, that doesn't really matter. It's more about what he made.
Yeah.
I mean, by being on Twitter, it made him a celebrity, and that no doubt helped boost sales of stuff as it went along, because people know about the game, because people know about him. So if to say, oh, get off Twitter, well, he might do, and then people might stop caring.
Yeah, he could be on
about
his
wanting to talk to him about the game.
Mocking the spreadsheet version of Fez, and then everyone goes and buys it. It doesn't even matter what it
is. Told you, he's quit because he's the new Doctor Who.
Nice Peter Capaldi.
Oh, is it? I didn't even know it'd been announced.
No. I don't care anyway.
No, I don't even like Doctor Who. But anyway, that's off topic.
The other thing I was going to mention, quickly, talking about communication and the internet, is that the lead director on Super Smash Bros., who basically cancelled the story mode they were doing because he didn't want the cutscenes uploaded to YouTube.
Oh, fuck Nintendo.
All right. Oh, yeah, so I suppose leaks and that kind of...
What are they doing?
It's quite an interesting thing.
They can't keep
fighting
their audience. I don't know what they're thinking.
It's bizarre. Well, it's like with the whole rise of YouTube as well, with video games, of people having their own channels there and stuff. And like before we said about the PR press releases, and the reason I said that's a dangerous thing is because... Outside the blogs, is because I think Nintendo, I don't know if they went back, but Sega did it, where they've blocked people and basically got loads of people's accounts.
That's both Sega and Nintendo.
On YouTube. Yeah. Just for playing games and uploading it and saying, you know, this is an old 90s game, I love it. Oh, well, your account's banned now because Sega says you're infringing their copyright. And it's like, well, the more kind of developer-focused blogs that exist and the more control they get on this sort of content, especially when you get to PS4 and Xbox... On Xbox One, what their ownership is of the stuff you can upload. I'm sure there'll be loads of small print on. If you upload it, it makes money, it's all ours, and we can take it down whenever we want. If you say anything negative about a game, the game company can just strip it all out.
Well,
and that sort of thing. I think that's, and it'll just be bad distrust, but I think that's where it's kind of heading, where, as you said, the press is, I think games companies, for some reason, see press as a dangerous thing in a way, and maybe they're trying these little baby steps, trying to nudge.
Well, I think Nintendo knows that it's about playing their games. That's what they want to emphasize. So they don't want people to watch their games; they want them to be played.
Yeah. But it's a weird thing because, that's advertisement. If someone has a Let's Play video and they get thousands and thousands and thousands of views, that's advertisement for their game. Yep. That's people. But you're saying that they might see it as, well, that's taken away from some sales because people aren't going to go and buy the game now because they've seen it.
It's like
on
cassettes.
YouTube.
Somebody's copying me that song, so I'm not going to go and buy
the album
now.
All they value is the interaction with the game. They want everything to be local and they want people to get together and play the game there. They don't want it to be like a social media thing. Yeah. They want it to be an experience you have personally. But that's kind of abstract.
And do you think...
Weird, I mean...
Do you think that's...
What? Mm. What's it?
Sorry, go on. Sorry? Sorry,
oh, okay.
I thought
you
were
asking a question.
I was just going to say, do you think it's... do you think Nintendo's right to do that, to force those channels to pay them instead of the person who actually created
Let's
Play
Video?
Well,
I think it's like just with music, they could shut down YouTube channels. I don't think it's any different. I think they created the game, it's the thing they can own. I think now that we're streaming games, it's something we have to think about. We'll probably never do a Nintendo game because of them. So, that sucks.
Yeah. No Nintendo, no Sega.
Better get rid of my Pikmin 3 stream!
Yeah, we're using even more trouble than we thought.
Yeah. It's too bad because that's the... They really built fan bases around what they make, so they could really benefit. Mm. I think
they want it all on the Miiverse.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing.
I think Let's Plays as well. I think it's a, like you say, it's almost like Shane was saying, it's free advertising. I've got into games from Let's Plays that I had struggled to even.
Yeah, there's been a couple of PC indie games that have made success, like that Surgeon Simulator was pretty much a YouTube success.
I had Crusader Kings 2 for about 6 months and I had no idea how to play it.
Yeah, Minecraft.
And I sat down and watched one of those videos and.
Was Surgeon Simulator?
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea how to play it still.
I haven't tried it yet.
There's a right way on Surgeon Simulator.
No.
I think you just knock shit around and maybe you achieve the goal. I don't know.
It's like real surgery.
Exactly.
Can you sew their stomach to their knees? You know?
Oh my god, I have no idea. I haven't even got that far. I've only just cracked some ribs.
I would only want to do it if I could do utterly reprehensible surgery to people and then see what the results were on the street.
Monster.
Just follow them about and they're trying to eat something and it's coming out of their knees. I'm a weird
ears, ears are stitched to their ankles.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay then. So that's a perfect note to end our discussion on communication within the video games industry. I suppose the main takeaways are there to be a little bit more positive if you can.
Maybe if you can. Just, if you enjoy it, just say you enjoy it.
Just
don't,
enjoy
don't just
it.
Let everyone else sit around slagging off and you just sit there silently going, that
try not
right.
to threaten to skin someone's wife if they change the stats on the gun you don't like as well.
Dark ending to this podcast.
Was that genuinely one that happened?
There is one on there. I swear to God that said, "I will peel your wife." I don't think he used that exact term, but the implication was definitely there. And then he said, "And then it will get bad for you," as if it hadn't already.
And then it will get bad.
As if that was just the start. Jesus,
the game is attitude, though, isn't it? If it happens to a woman, it doesn't matter. We're just
exactly.
Yeah. Just one more point I'd like to raise. I think the games journalism, with the rise of blogs and things, has become a lot more, I don't want to say inclusive, because I think it's still quite negative, but it's become a lot more diverse. You have lots of different people discussing lots of different things, because they have that platform to have a voice. You can follow someone like Brainy Gamer, there's a site called Brainy Gamer, who does really detailed, in-depth discussion about the industry and video games and their design. There's also, general video game sites like the IGN that do really entertainment focus, and there's lots of other different kind of sites that have different kind of focuses. There's also a lot of good blogs out there that look at women in the industry and the portrayal of women in the industry and just generally throughout the industry how they are treated. So I think it's a positive thing that the internet has allowed video games journalism and communication in the industry to become a lot more diverse.
Here.
And that's it. Okay, so that's it for episode 32. If you want to let us know that you hate our guts and think that we should die, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums, or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_thunderbolt, or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye. From Shane?
Goodbye.
From Calvin?
Fuck Call of Duty.
And from Nick?
See you later. Talk about to you. Just another communication.